Wednesday, 5 p.m., a beautiful Wednesday. Happy to be here. Time for American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City, New York. I'm Tom Ryan. Hopefully, I'll be your host for the next hour, if you're willing to stay with us. And my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, taking care of all of the technical stuff. In fact, she's away from her mic now because she's taking care of a couple of pins and sliders and buttons and knobs and things. So, as you know, on Wednesdays, we always take a deep look at albums. And we're in a very interesting era now. We've finally gotten to January of 1977. The year 1977 is upon us in our list. We started way back in 1955. We're just about at the halfway point of the overall total of songs. Meaning to say we've just about hit the 500 mark. As far as the top 500 list goes, we're well past the halfway mark. Today's album is number 271 out of the 500 top 500 of the top 40 albums that we plan to cover. It's an album that made it up to number 11 in America, although a lot of critics, I think, didn't think it deserved that, but we'll get to that. I certainly thought it deserved it. It's a David Bowie album, and it's simply called Low. Now, David Bowie was never the type of artist who let his mood, or his private life for that matter, stop him from being creative. Depending on what era of his that you might favor, you can never deny that he was putting his soul into his work. At times, he would be light and playful, but at other times, he could be explicitly dark and wallow in his pain or whatever it was that defined his mental state at that specific time. I've heard many explanations about why this album is titled Low, but to my observation, the things that I've heard, I don't believe. I think that he is quite obviously referring to his state of mind when he started this project. I mean, somebody said it's low because the picture on the cover is a profile shot and it's meant to be like a joke, like low profile. And I'm like, that's lame. I really think he's referring to his mental state at this point in time. When Bowie talks about this era of his life, Bowie himself stated, and this is a quote, "I was in serious decline, emotionally and socially, on course to be just another rock casualty." Meaning that he was probably at the lowest point of his life up until this point in time. Now, there's a relentlessly cool bleakness that defines Low, and yet the music is so intriguing and strange that it transcends hopelessness, at least for me it does. The very first words that we hear, which is on the second song, a song called Breaking Glass, after the intriguing instrumental opener, the lyrics are quite literally that of a deranged mind. That sense of off-balance mentality persists on Low, and it is responsible for some critics despising the album. But in rock and roll, there have been and should be an infinite number of perspectives. So Bowie's Dark Hour takes us on a mental trip that is dissociative, antisocial, and ice cold, and yet honest, and in my opinion, always intriguing. Like Bowie would later sing about his most famous character, Major Tom, here we see the author himself hitting an all-time low, but maintaining his creativity in remarkable fashion. The album opens up with an instrumental track that sounds as though it almost will sound as though I missed the intro. It's the weirdest opening track for the first 3 seconds that I could imagine, because it just sounds like, it's like, and then boom, there it is, it's in. It's almost like they forgot to record the first 5 seconds. It is called Speed of Life. We'll be right back.
Is Brian Eno all over this song or what?
He's all over the album. I mean, he's a very big part of it, playing like almost all of the synthesizers and stuff. But you'd be surprised, Heidi, to learn that he's actually not the producer. Tony Visconti is the guy that's been producing Bowie like on and off, going all the way back to Ziggy Stardust and right on up to the last album that he recorded in his lifetime. Those two became like lifers together. But on this album, well, really, they were working like a trio, the three of them. And on that track in particular, Tony Visconti wanted to play with like the drum sound a little bit. And for that alone, just the drum sound of this entire album is one of the most absolutely stunning things I think you could have possibly heard. I've never heard drums like this before, and it's probably become one of the most imitated sort of drum sounds since because of the way that he played with it. Tony Visconti, had got himself this thing called an Eventide harmonizer. It was the first commercially available pitch-shifting device. Now, I remember, because I've actually done some studio work, where you could actually take this thing and go through this thing, and you could change the key of what you are doing without having it change the speed of what you were doing. Of course, before, if you wanted to make something go up in pitch, you'd have to make it go faster. But this harmonizer thing allowed that to happen without changing the pitch. So he wondered what would happen if he applied it to the drums. And Bowie saw him playing with it. He said, what does that machine do? And he said to him, it F's around with the fabric of time, which is actually kind of true. So he started like figuring out ways to make the drums go boom, boom every time he hit it. And that's just like crazy superhuman stuff that never existed before. So Visconti said, my brain nearly exploded when I found what I could do with drums while using the harmonizer. It just created an infinite dropping of the pitch as though it was like falling off of a cliff, but then constantly coming back with each stroke all over again. It was an amazing thing. So that's the instrumental opening, which is sort of very new and cool and very Bowie-like. So you figure, oh, this is going to be awesome. But immediately, the mood changes. And the second track comes up, which is a very short song. It's not even 2 minutes long. There's barely six lines of lyrics in it. But those six lines of lyrics are totally deranged. It's like really dark. Apparently, Bowie said that he was inspired to write it because of the status of his relationship with his then wife, Angela, which was falling apart. And she was apparently, like, I don't know, dating a drummer. And I don't know what that has to do with any of it, because I'm sure that they both had an open situation. But Bowie's frame of mind was incredibly negative. And I think that he really went as far toward being almost grotesque in terms of like his lyrics on this song, that it's almost comical. It's called Breaking Glass.
Don't look at the carpet. I drew something awful on it. See, person, but you got problems.
it's so, I don't know why. I find that song so interesting. And I mean, a lot of people find it offensive. Critics do. There's plenty of critics. We'll let them have their say later. I'm going to read a few things of what they said about this album. Obviously, I'm on the other side of it because here I am including this album as one of my 1,000 favorite albums of all time. That's what this show is about, is me picking my favorite 1,000 albums. Well, 500 of them popular and 500 of them not top 40, but this absolutely qualifies because I find it so intriguing that Bowie can get so deep by saying so little, just by being so oddball and off kilter and not at all like where he was just even the previous year. Forget the Ziggy Stardust era, or forget Hunky Dory. That's like ages ago. Although in reality, it's only about 5 years. That's, you know, think about 5 years. If you go to, how 2021 doesn't really feel that long ago, right? All in all. So it's not that much of a time gap, but he's changed a lot in that amount of time. Now, the next song is called What in the World. Around this time, Bowie was working with Iggy Pop. Because of Bowie's drug addiction and the problems that he was going through, he had gone to Germany, actually living by the wall with Iggy, to try to see if they could free themselves from their addictions. And one of the things that Bowie decided to do was to help Iggy Pop record his album. And that's where The Idiot came from, the album The Idiot. And Bowie was supplying him with some material for that. And this next song was almost going to be on that album. It was, but eventually it was changed around and Bowie took the lead vocal. But if you listen closely, the person singing harmony with him is Iggy Pop. It's called What in the World?
You're just a little girl with gray eyes. Never mind, say something. Wait until the crowd cries. Oh, wait until the crowd cries. You're just a little girl with gray eyes. Go deep in your room. You never leave your room. Something deep inside of me, yearning deep inside of me, talking through the gloom. What in the world can you do? What in the world can you do? I'm in the mood for your love. For your love. For your love. For your love. Oh. I'm just a little bit afraid of you, cause love will make you cry. But wait until the crowd goes. Wait until the crowd goes. I'm just a little bit afraid of you. So deep in your room, you never leave your room. Something deep inside of me, yearning deep inside of me, is talking through the gloom. What in the world can I do? What in the world can I do? I'm in the mood for your love.
I love this album, like unabashedly love it, is the fact that it is impossible for it to get old. It's impossible to get tired of an album like this. The music is so off kilter and so like surprisingly weird that that in itself is enough to maintain it. But if you listen to the music at all, I happen to be wearing headphones now here in the studio, but if you can listen deeply, there are so many layers of things that are going on all over the place that takes you to like a whole different mood. A lot of times the music does not coincide with the lyrics. They seem to almost contradict each other. And then there's all the weird layers of things and the really strange synthesizer sounds that are not, I mean, this is not Rick Wakeman sort of stuff. This is really them toying with sound in a way that they know that it's not a commercial thing to do. In fact, when this record was delivered to RCA, Bowie turned it in as his new album. They refused to release it. They literally held it back for 3 months because they said that this isn't going to sell. This could ruin your career. We're not going to release it. Somehow, after 3 months, with Bowie probably just ignoring them or basically saying you're not getting anything else, they just decided to release it. And they were obviously wrong because the album went to number 11. I mean, that's not a bad chart position by anybody's, standard. I mean, I'll admit, maybe Bowie is used to being top 10 at this point in time, but going to number 11 with an album this strange is actually quite a feat because radio was afraid of this album. There was no single, that's for sure, or anything that would qualify as a standard version of a single is probably a better way to put it. I think technically there was a single. I'm not really sure. Yeah, Sound and Vision, which is the next song we're going to play, is the track that was a single. And it's the closest thing on the album to being a standard pop song. It's got, a verse chorus stuff, but it's weird because the song's 3 minutes long and Bowie doesn't open his mouth until the midpoint of the song. He waits a minute and a half before he even starts to sing any lyrics. So that's not commercial, not at all. And although the music itself sounds pretty upbeat, it sounds like it's a pretty happy song. Bowie's words are, just kind of like sort of weird and dark. It was Brian Eno who said that he was helping like how to structure this song. And he said he wanted to like let the song go for about more to the halfway point before Bowie started to sing because he wanted to, quote, confound listener expectations. Like, okay, deliberately. And then basically having the lyrics themselves work against the music. So here's what would have been, well, what was the single, can't call it a hit single, and it's the song Sound and Vision.
Sound and Vision.
with sound and vision. Drifting into my solitude. Over my head. Don't you wonder sometimes about sound and vision?
Yeah, another thing to mention about the album that occurred to me as I'm listening to that is each of these songs sound as almost like it's a fragment of something else. Like the song starts and it's like, it feels like it's like it faded in from something else that already happened. And when it disappears, it's like, well, wait a minute, it's not done. You know, you get this sense of things not quite being balanced in a normal way that pop music would have it. Which is one of the greatest things about playing this album over and over again. It just never really gets old for that reason. But the female voice on that, by the way, was Mary Hopkin, the woman who sang Those Were the Days and Paul McCartney's Goodbye. They brought her in to sing the ooh background stuff. Now, the next song, it's got a funny title. It's Always Crashing in the Same Car. And I always thought that was like a metaphor for like, constantly making the same mistake over and over again, which is definitely what he means. But the fact is that Bowie actually told a story once that it was actually literal, that there was a drug dealer that he dealt with in California when he was living there, and he was at his very lowest ebb in his entire life, and the guy was constantly ripping him off. So when Bowie saw him, repeatedly crashed his car into the drug addict, into the drug dealer's car over and over and over again, just repetitively just bashing his car out of frustration. So I guess that somehow inspired Bowie to say, wow, look where I've come to. I'm always crashing in the same car. Here's that tune.
Every chance.
Oh, if nothing, it's so deeply interesting, isn't it? On our way, by the way, listening to WHBC, WHBC HD, Garden City, New York. We are playing our way through the album Low by David Bowie. Probably a private low point in his life, but I would say creatively, anything but. It's just rather incredible to imagine that a person could be that like torn away from the society that he had once been a part of in his head, and yet be able to be so incredibly creative in his own mind and come up with all these things that are like equally upsetting and humorous somehow at the exact same time. There's two tracks left on side one. We'll play them back to back, and this is one of the more sad songs on the album. I think it's called Be My Wife, which you'd think would be uplifting, but it's obviously, the person who is saying that is definitely not in love. And it's more or less about loneliness or being like disconnected from society and just feeling like, please, I just need to hold on to something. That's what I think it is. And then it ends with an instrumental track called A New Career in a New Town, which might be a reference to Bowie and Pop moving to Berlin just to get away from the problems that were ensuing them. So here's Be My Wife, and followed by a new career and a new town.
Sometimes it gets so lonely. Sometimes you get nowhere. I've lived all over the world. Every place. So lonely. Sometimes you get nowhere. I've lived all over the world. I've lived every place. Be my wife. Sometimes it gets so lonely. We'll be right back.
that marks the end of side one. And for your information, that was the normal side. Now we flip it to side two, where things get weird. It's totally instrumental. It's basically like a therapy side, I think. It's Bowie's therapy. The recording, I think, felt like was therapy for him because he's working with Brian Eno and Tony Visconti and Iggy Pop with Carlos Alomar and the band, and they were getting along during this, and it was great to see that the things were working, even though they were loopy. So we'll play a couple of the instrumental tracks here that were how the experiments really did work with Bowie and Brian Eno writing the first track called Warsaw, and follow that with Art Decade.
Thank you.
sorry, but I never allowed time for the nasty critical comments that I wanted to like thrust out there, but just as well, whatever. But we have these two songs left. Surely both of them were influenced by their being in East Germany near the wall. The next track is called Weeping Wall, followed by Subterraneans. Hope you enjoyed this as much as I enjoyed playing it for you, folks. Take care. Hope you can join us Friday, too. Pink Floyd. See you then.